Sir Roderick had smashed down the door, he found her with her mouth all bloody and her fingers chewed off.
The monster has tied us a thorny knot, the old knight told Maester Lewin. Like it or not, Lady Hornwood was his wife. He made her say the vows before both Septon and Hartree, and bedded her that very night before witnesses. She signed a will naming him as heir and fixed her seal to it.
Vows made at sword point are not valid, the maester argued.
Roose Bolton may not agree, not with land at issue.
Sir Roderick looked unhappy.
Would that I could take this serving man's head off as well. He's as bad as his master. But I fear I must keep him alive until Rob returns from his wars. He's the only witness to the worst of the bastard's crimes. Perhaps when Lord Bolton hears his tale, he will abandon his claim. But meantime, we have Manderley knights and Dreadfort men killing one another in Hornwood forests, and I lack the strength to stop them.
The old knight turned in his seat and gave Bran a stern look.
And what have you been about while I've been away, my lord prince? Commanding our guardsmen not to wash? Do you want them smelling like this reek? Is that it?
The sea is coming here, Bran said. Jojen saw it in a green dream. Alebelly is going to drown. Maester Lewin tugged at his chain collar.
The reed boy believes he sees the future in his dream, Sir Roderick. I've spoken to Bran about the uncertainty of such prophecies, but if truth be told, there is trouble along the stony shore. Raiders in longships, plundering fishing villages, raping and burning. Leobald Tallheart has sent his nephew, Benfred, to deal with them, but I expect they'll take to their ships and flee at the first sight of armed men.
Aye, and strike somewhere else. The others take all such cowards. They would never dare, no more than the bastard of Bolton, if our main strength were not 1,000 leagues south.
Sir Roderick looked at Bran.
What else did the lad tell you?
He said the water would flow over our walls. He saw Alebelly drowned, and Micken, and Septon Shale too.
Sir Roderick frowned.
Well, should it happen that I need to ride against these raiders myself, I shan't take Alebelly then. He didn't see me drowned, did he? No? Oh, good.
It heartened Bran to hear that.
Maybe they won't drown then,
he thought,
if they stay away from the sea.
Meera thought so too, later that night when she and Jojen met Bran in his room to play a three-sided game of tiles. But her brother shook his head.
The things I see in green dreams can't be changed.
That made his sister angry.
Why would the gods send a warning if we can't heed it and change what's to come?
I don't know,
Jojen said sadly.
If you were Alebelly, you'd probably jump into the well and have done with it. He should fight, and Bran should too.
Me? Bran suddenly felt afraid.
What should I fight? Am I going to drown too?
Meera looked at him guiltily.
I shouldn't have said.
He could tell she was hiding something.
Did you see me in a green dream?
He asked Jojen nervously.
Was I drowned? Not drowned,
Jojen spoke as if every word pained him.
I dreamed of the man who came today, the one they call Reek. You and your brother lay dead at his feet, and he was skinning off your faces with a long red blade.
Meera rose to her feet.
If I went to the dungeon, I could drive a spear right through his heart. How could he murder Bran if he was dead? The jailers will stop you,
Jojen said.
The guards. And if they tell them why you want him dead, they'll never believe.
I have guards too,
Bran reminded them.
Alebelly and Poxy Tim and Hayhead and the rest.
Jojun's mussy eyes were full of pity.
They won't be able to stop him, Bran. I couldn't see why, but I saw the end of it. I saw you and Rickon in your crypts, down in the dark, with all the dead kings and their stone walls.
No, Bran thought, no. If I went away to Greywater or to the Crow, someplace far where they couldn't find me,
it will not matter. The dream was green, Bran, and the green dreams do not lie.
Tyrion. Varys stood over the brazier, warming his soft hands.
It would appear Renly was murdered most fearfully in the very midst of his army. His shirt was open from ear to ear by a blade that passed through steel and bone as if they were soft cheese.
Murdered by whose hand? Cersei demanded.
Have you ever considered that too many answers are the same as no answers at all? My informers are not always as highly placed as we might like. When a king dies, fancies sprout like mushrooms in the dark. A groom says that Renly was slain by a knight of his own rainbow guard. A washerwoman claims Stannis stole through the heart of his brother's army with his magic sword. Several men-at-arms believe a woman did the fell deed, but cannot agree on which woman. A maid that Renly had spurned claims one. A camp follower brought in to serve his pleasure on the eve of battle says a second. The third ventures that it might have been the Lady Catelyn Stark.
The Queen was not pleased.
Must you waste our time with every rumour the fools care to tell?
You pay me well for these rumours, my gracious Queen.
We pay you for the truth, Lord Varys. Remember that, or this small council may grow smaller still.
Varys tittered nervously.
You and your noble brother will leave his grace with no council at all, if you continue.
I dare say the realm could survive a few less councillors, said Littlefinger with a smile.
Dear, dear Potar, said Varys. Are you not concerned that yours might be the very next name on the hand's little list?
Before you, Varys, I should never dream of it.
Mayhaps we will be brothers on the wall together, you and I.
Varys giggled again. Sooner than you'd like, if the next words out of your mouth are not something useful, eunuch. From the look in her eyes, Cersei was prepared to castrate Varys all over again.
Might this be some ruse? Asked Littlefinger.
If so, it is a ruse of surpassing cleverness, said Varys. It has certainly hoodwinked me.
Tyrion had heard enough.
Joff will be so disappointed, he said. He was saving such a nice spike for Renly's head. But whoever did the deed, we must assume that Stannis was behind it. The gain is clearly his.
He didn't like the news. He had counted on the brothers Baratheon decimating each other in bloody battle. He could feel his elbow throbbing where the Morning Star had laid it open. It did that sometimes in the damp. He squeezed it uselessly in his hand and asked,
What of Renly's host?
The greater part of his foot remains at Bitterbridge.
Varys abandoned the brazier to take his seat at the table.
Most of the lords who rode with Lord Renly to Storm's End have gone over banner and blade to Stannis with all their chivalry.
Led by the Florence, I'll wager, said Littlefinger.
Varys gave him a simpering smile.
You would win, my lord. Lord Aelstor was indeed the first to bend the knee. Many others followed.
Many, Tyrion said pointedly. But not all.
Not all, agreed the eunuch. Not Loras Tyrell, nor Randall Tarley, nor Mathis Ruin, and Stormzy in itself has not yielded. Sir Courtenay Penrose holds the castle in Renly's name and will not believe his liege is dead. He demands to see the mortal remains before he opens his gates. But it seems that Renly's corpse has unaccountably vanished, carried away, most likely. A fifth of Renly's knights departed with Sir Loras rather than bend the knee to Rosanus. It's said the Knight of Flowers went mad when he saw his king's body and slew three of Renly's guards in his wrath, among them Eamon Kai and Robert Royce.
A pity is stopped at three, thought Tyrion.
Sir Loras is likely making for Bitterbridge, Varys went on. His sister is there, Renly's queen, as well as a great many soldiers who suddenly find themselves kingless. Which side will they take now? A ticklish question. Many serve the lords who remained at Storm's End, and those lords now belong to Stannis.
Tyrion leaned forward. There is a chance here, it seems to me. Win Loras Tyrell to our cause, and Lord Mace Tyrell and his bannermen might join us as well. They may have sworn their swords to Stannis for the moment, yet they cannot love the man, or they would have been his from the start.
Is their love for us any greater? Asked Cersei.
Scarcely, said Tyrion. They love Renly, clearly, but Renly is slain. Perhaps we can give them good and sufficient reasons to prefer Joffrey to Stannis, if we move quickly.
What sort of reasons do you mean to give them?
Gold reasons, Littlefinger suggested at once.
Varys made a tisking sound.
Sweet Petar, surely you do not mean to suggest that these puissant lords and noble knights could be bought like so many chickens in the market.
Have you been to our markets of late, Lord Varys? Asked Littlefinger.
You'd find it easier to buy a lord than a chicken, I dare say. Of course, lords cluck prouder than chickens, and take it ill if you offer them coin like a tradesman, but they are seldom adverse to taking gifts, honours, lands, castles.
Bribes may sway some of the lesser lords, Tyrion said, but never I garden.
True, Littlefinger admitted. The Knight of Flowers is the key there. Mace Tyrell has two older sons, but Loras has always been his favorite. Win him, and Highgarden will be yours.
Yes, thought Tyrion. It seems to me that we should take a lesson from the late Lord Renly. We can win the Tyrell alliance, as he did, with a marriage.
Varys understood the quickest.
You think to wed King Joffrey to Margaery Tyrell?
I do. Renly's young queen was no more than 15, 16, he seemed to recall. Older than Joffrey, but a few years were nothing. It was so neat and sweet he could taste it.
Joffrey is betrothed to Sansa Stark, Cersei objected. Marriage contracts can be broken. What advantage is there in wedding the king to the daughter of a dead traitor?
Littlefinger spoke up.
You might point out to his grace that the Tyrells are much wealthier than the Starks, and that Margaery is said to be lovely and beddable besides.
Yes, said Tyrion. Joff ought to like that well enough.
My son is too young to care about such things.
You think so? Asked Tyrion. He's 13, Cersei, the same age at which I married.
You shamed us all with that sorry episode. Joffrey is made of finer stuff.
So fine that he had Sir Boris rip off Sansa's gown.
He was angry with the girl.
He was angry with that cook's boy who spilled the soup last night as well. But he didn't strip him naked.
This was not a matter of some spilled soup.
No, it was a matter of some pretty tits.
After that business in the yard, Tyrion had spoken with Varys about how they might arrange for Joffrey to visit Shataya's. A taste of honey might sweeten the boy, he hoped. He might even be grateful, gods forbid. And Tyrion could do with a shade more gratitude from his sovereign. It would need to be done secretly, of course. The tricky bit would be parting him from the hound. The dog is never far from his master's heels, he observed to Varys. But all men sleep, and some gamble, and whore, and visit wine sinks as well.
The hound does all these things, if that is your question.
No, said Tyrion. My question is, when?
Varys had laid a finger on his cheek, smiling enigmatically. My lord, a suspicious man might think you wish to find a time when Sandor Clegane was not protecting King Joffrey, the better to do the boy some harm.
Surely you know me better than that, Lord Varys, Tyrion said. Why, all I want is for Joffrey to love me.
The eunuch had promised to look into the matter. The war made its own demands, though. Joffrey's initiation into manhood would need to wait.
Doubtless you know your son better than I do, he made himself tell Cersei. But regardless, there's still much to be said for a Tyrell marriage. It may be the only way that Joffrey lives long enough to reach his wedding night.
Littlefinger agreed. The Stark girl brings Joffrey nothing but her body, sweet as that may be. Margaery Tyrell brings 50,000 swords and all the strength of Highgarden.
Indeed, Varys laid a soft hand on the queen's sleeve. You have a mother's heart, and I know his grace loves his little sweetling. Yet kings must learn to put the needs of the realm before their own desires. I say this offer must be made.
The queen pulled free of the eunuch's touch. You would not speak so if you were women. Say what you will, my lords, but Joffrey is too proud to settle for Renly's leavings. He will never consent.
Tyrion shrugged. When the king comes of age in 3 years, he may give or withhold his consent as he pleases. Until then, you are his regent, and I am his hand, and he will marry whomever we tell him to marry, leavings or no.
Cersei's quiver was empty. Make your offer, then. But God save you all if Joff does not like this girl.
I'm so pleased we can agree, Tyrion said. Now which of us shall go to Bitterbridge? We must reach Solaris with our offer before his blood can cool.
You mean to send one of the council?
I can scarcely expect the Knight of Flowers to treat with Bronn or Shagga, can I? The Tyrells are proud.
His sister wasted no time trying to twist the situation to her advantage.
Sir Jaslyn Bywater is nobly born. Send him.
Tyrion shook his head.
We need someone who can do more than repeat our words and fetch back a reply. Our envoy must speak for king and council and settle the matter quickly.
The hand speaks with the king's voice. Candlelight gleamed green as wildfire in Cersei's eyes.
If we send you, Tyrion, it will be as if Joffrey went himself. And who better? You wield words as skillfully as Jaime wields a sword.
Are you that eager to get me out of the city, Cersei?
You are too kind, sister, but it seems to me that a boy's mother is better fitted to arrange his marriage than any uncle, and you have a gift for winning friends that I could never hope to match.
Her eyes narrowed.
Joff needs me at his side.
Your Grace, my Lord Hand, said Littlefinger, the king needs both of you here. Let me go in your stead.
You?
What gain does he see in this? Tyrion wondered.
I am of the king's council, yet not the king's blood, so I would make a poor hostage. I knew Solaris passing well when he was here at court, and gave him no cause to mislike me. Mace Tyrell bears me no enmity that I know of, and I flatter myself that I am not unskilled in negotiations.
He has us.
Tyrion did not trust Pataia Baelish, nor did he want the man out of his sight. Yet what other choice was left him? It must be Littlefinger or Tyrion himself, and he knew full well that if he left King's Landing for any length of time, all that he had managed to accomplish would be undone. "There is fighting between here and Bitterbridge," he said cautiously, "and you can be past certain that Lord Stannis will be dispatching his own shepherds to gather in his brother's wayward lambs."
"I've never been frightened of shepherds. It's the sheep who trouble me. Still, I suppose an escort might be in order."
"I can spare 100 gold cloaks."
500.
300.
"And 40 more, 20 knights with as many squires. If I arrive without a knightly tale, the Tyrells will think me of small account."
That was true enough. "Agreed.
I'll include Horror and Slubber in my party and send them on to their Lord Father afterward. A gesture of goodwill. We need Paxter Redwine. He's Mace Tyrell's oldest friend and a great power in his own right."
"And a traitor," the Queen said, balking. "The Arbor would have declared for Renly with all the rest, except that Redwine knew full well his whelps would suffer for it."
"Renly is dead, Your Grace," Littlefinger pointed out, "and neither Stannis nor Lord Paxter will have forgotten how Redwine galleys closed the sea during the siege of Storm's End. Restore the twins, and perchance we may win Redwine's love."
Cersei remained unconvinced. "The others can keep his love. I want his swords and sails. Holding tight to those twins is the best way to make certain that we'll have them." Tyrion had the answer. "Then let us send Sir Hobber back to the Arbor and keep Sir Arys here. Lord Paxter ought to be clever enough to riddle out the meaning of that, I should think." The suggestion was carried without protest, but Littlefinger was not done.
"We'll want horses, swift and strong. The fighting will make remounts hard to come by. A goodly supply of gold will also be needed for those gifts we spoke of earlier."
"Take as much as you require. If the city falls, Stannis will steal it all anyway."
"I want my commission in writing, a document that will leave Mace Tyrell in no doubt as to my authority, granting me full power to treat with him concerning this match and any other arrangements that might be required, and to make binding pledges in the king's name. It should be signed by Joffrey and every member of this council, and bear all our seals."
Tyrion shifted uncomfortably. "Done. Will that be all? I remind you there's a long road between here and Bitterbridge."
"I'll be riding it before dawn breaks," Littlefinger rose. "I trust that on my return the king will see that I am suitably rewarded for my valiant efforts in his cause."
Varys giggled.
"Joffrey is such a grateful sovereign. I am certain you will have no cause to complain, my good, brave lord."
The queen was more direct. "What do you want, Pataia?"
Littlefinger glanced at Tyrion with a sly smile. "I shall have to give that some consideration. No doubt I'll think of something." He sketched an airy bow and took his leave, as casual as if he were off to one of his brothels. Tyrion glanced out of the window. The fog was so thick that he could not even see the curtain wall across the yard. A few dim lights shone indistinct through that greyness. "A foul day for travel," he thought. He did not envy Pataia Baelish. "We had best see to drawing up those documents. Lord Varys, send for parchment and quill, and someone will need to wake Joffrey." It was still grey and dark when the meeting finally ended. Varys scurried off alone, his soft slippers whisking along the floor. The Lannisters lingered a moment by the door. "How comes your chain, brother?" the Queen asked, as Sir Preston fastened a vair-lined cloth of silver cloak about her shoulders. "Link by link it grows longer."
we should thank the gods that Sir Courtney Penrose is as stubborn as he is. Stannis will never march north with Storm's End untaken in his rear.
Tyrion, I know that we've not always agreed on policy, but it seems to me that I was wrong about you. You are not so big a fool as I imagined. In truth, I realize now that you have been a great help. For that, I thank you. You must forgive me if I have spoken to you harshly in the past.
Must I?
He gave her a shrug and a smile.
Sweet sister, you have said nothing that requires forgiveness.
Today, you mean? They both laughed, and Cersei leaned over and planted a quick, soft kiss on his brow. Too astonished for words, Tyrion could only watch her stride off down the hall, Sir Preston at her side.
Have I lost my wits? Or did my sister just kiss me?
He asked Brunn when she was gone.
Was it so sweet?
It was anticipated.
Cersei had behaved queerly of late. Tyrion found it very unsettling.
I am trying to recall the last time she kissed me. I could not have been more than 6 or 7. Jamie had dared her to do it.
The woman's finally taken note of your charms.
No, Tyrion said.
No, the woman is hatching something. Best find out what, Bronn. You know, I hate surprises.
Theon. Theon wiped the spittle off his cheek with the back of his hand.
Robb will gut you, Greyjoy,
Benfred Tallheart screamed.
He'll feed your turncoat's heart to his wolf, you piece of sheep dung.
Aaron Damphair's voice cut through the insults like a sword through cheese.
Now you must kill him.
I have questions for him first, said Theon.
Fuck your questions.
Benfred hung bleeding and helpless between Stig and Werelag.
You'll choke on them before you get any answers from me, Craven, Turncloak.
Uncle Aaron was relentless.
When he spits on you, he spits on all of us. He spits on the drowned god. He must die.
My father gave me the command here, Uncle,
and sent me to counsel you
and to watch me.
Theon dared not push matters too far with his uncle. The command was his, yes, but his men had a faith in the drowned god that they did not have in him, and they were terrified of Aaron Damphair.
I can't fault them for that.
You'll lose your head for this, Greyjoy. The crows will eat the jelly of your eyes.
Benfred tried to spit again, but only managed a little blood.
The others bugger your wet god.
Tallheart, you've spit away your life, Theon thought.
Stig, silence him, he said.
They forced Benfred to his knees. Werelag tore the rabbit skin off his belt and jammed it between his teeth to stop him shouting. Stig unlimbered his axe.
Now, Aaron Damphair declared, he must be given to the god, the old way.
What does it matter? Dead is dead.
Take him then. You will come as well. You command here. The offering should come from you.
That was more than Theon can stomach.
You are the priest, Uncle. I'll leave the god to you. Do me the same kindness and leave the battles to me.
He waved his hand, and Werelag and Stig began to drag their captive off toward the shore. Aaron Damphair gave his nephew a reproachful look, then followed. Down to the pebbled beach they would go, to drown Benfred Tallheart in salt water, the old way.
Perhaps it's a kindness,
Theon told himself as he stalked off in the other direction. Stig was hardly the most expert of headsmen, and Benfred had a neck thick as a boar's, heavy with muscle and fat.
I used to mock him for it, just to see how angry I could make him,
he remembered. That had been, what, 3 years past, when Ned Stark had ridden to Torren Square to see Sir Helman. Theon had accompanied him and spent a fortnight in Benfred's company. He could hear the rough noises of victory from the crook in the road where the battle had been fought, if you could go so far as to call it a battle.
More like slaughtering sheep, if truth be told. Sheep fleeced in steel.
but sheep nonetheless. Climbing a jumble of stone, Theon looked down on the dead men and dying horses. The horses had deserved better. Timor and his brothers had gathered up what mounts had come through the fight unhurt, while Urzen and Black Lauren silenced the animals too badly wounded to be saved. The rest of his men were looting the corpses. Gevin Harlaw knelt on a dead man's chest, sawing off his finger to get it a ring.
Paying the iron price, my lord father would approve.
Theon thought of seeking out the bodies of the two men he'd slain himself to see if they had any jewelry worth the taking. But the notion left a bitter taste in his mouth. He could imagine what Eddard Stark would have said. Yet that thought made him angry too.
Stark is dead and rotting, and naught to me, he reminded himself.
Old Butley, who was called Fish Whiskers, sat scowling by his pile of plunder while his three sons added to it. One of them was in a shoving match with a fat man named Tudric, who was reeling among the slain with a horn of ale in one hand and an axe in the other, clad in a cloak of white fox fur, only slightly stained by the blood of its previous owner.
Drunk,
Theon decided, watching him bellow. It was said that the Iron Men of old had oft been blood-drunk in battle, so berserk that they felt no pain and feared no foe. But this was a common ale-drunk.
Wex, my bow and quiver.
The boy ran and fetched them. Theon bent the bow and slipped the string into its notches as Tudric knocked down the butler boy and flung ale into his eyes. Fish Whiskers leapt up cursing, but Theon was quicker. He drew on the hand that clutched the drinking horn, figuring to give them a shot to talk about, but Tudric spoiled it by lurching to one side as he loosed. The arrow took him through the belly. The looters stopped to gape. Theon lowered his bow.
No drunkards, I said, and no squabbles over plunder.
On his knees, Tudric was dying noisily.
Butley, silence him.
Fish Whiskers and his sons were quick to obey. They slit Tudric's throat as he kicked feebly and were stripping him of cloak and rings and weapons before he was even dead.
Now they know I mean what I say.
Lord Balin might have given him the command, but Theon knew that some of his men saw only a soft boy from the Greenlands when they looked at him.
Anyone else ever thirst?
No one replied.
Good.
He kicked at Benfred's fallen banner, clutched in the dead hand of the squire who'd borne it. A rabbit skin had been tied below the flag.
Why rabbit skins?
He had meant to ask, but being spat on had made him forget his questions. He tossed his bow back to Wex and strode off, remembering how elated he'd felt after the Whispering Wood, and wondering why this did not taste as sweet.
Tallheart, you bloody overproud fool, you never even sent out a scout.
They'd been joking and even singing as they'd come on, the three trees of Tallheart streaming above them while rabbit skins flapped stupidly from the points of their lances. The archers concealed behind the gorse had spoiled the song with a rain of arrows, and Theon himself had led his men at arms out to finish the butcher's work with dagger, axe, and warhammer. He had ordered their leader spared for questioning. Only he had not expected it to be Benfred Tallheart. His limp body was being dragged from the surf when Theon returned to his sea bitch. The masts of his longships stood outlined against the sky along the pebbled beach. Of the fishing village, nothing remained but the cold ashes that stank when it rained. The men had been put to the sword, all but a handful that Theon had allowed to flee to bring the word to Torren Square. Their wives and daughters had been claimed for salt wives, those who were young enough and fair. The crones and the ugly ones had simply been raped and killed, or taken for thralls, if they had useful skills and did not seem likely to cause trouble. Theon had planned that attack as well, bringing his ships up to the shore in the chill darkness before the dawn, and leaping from the prow with a long axe in his hand to lead his men into the sleeping village. He did not like the taste of any of this, but what choice did he have? His thrice-damned sister was sailing her black wind north even now, sure to win a castle of her own. Lord Balin had let no word of the hosting escape the Iron Islands, and Theon's bloody work along the stony shore would be put down to sea raiders out for plunder. The Northmen would not realize their true peril, not until the hammers fell on Deepwood Mott and Moat Cailin. And after all is done and won, they will make songs for that bitch, Asher, and forget that I was even here. That is, if he allowed it. Dagmar Cleftjaw stood by the high-carved prow of his longship, Foam Drinker. Theon had assigned him the task of guarding the ships. Otherwise, men would have called it Dagmar's victory, not his. A more prickly man might have taken that for a slight, but the Cleftjaw had only laughed.
"The day is won," Dagmar called down, "and yet you do not smile, boy. The living should smile, for the dead cannot."
He smiled himself to show how it was done. It made for a hideous sight. Under a snowy white mane of hair, Dagmar Cleftjaw had the most gut-churning scar Theon had ever seen, the legacy of the long axe that had near killed him as a boy. The blow had splintered his jaw, shattered his front teeth, and left him four lips where other men had but two. A shaggy beard covered his cheeks and neck, but the hair would not grow over the scar, so a shiny seam of puckered, twisted flesh divided his face like a crevasse through a snowfield.
"We could hear them singing," the old warrior said. "It was a good song, and they sang it bravely."
"They sang better than they fought. Arps would have done them as much good as their lances did."
"How many men are lost?"
"Of ours?" Theon shrugged. "Todrick. I killed him for getting drunk and fighting over loot."
"Some men are born to be killed."
A lesser man might have been afraid to show a smile as frightening as his. Yet Dagmar grinned more often and more broadly than Lord Balon ever had. Ugly as it was, that smile brought back 100 memories. Theon had seen it often as a boy, when he'd jumped a horse over a mossy wall or flung an axe and split a target square. He'd seen it when he'd blocked a blow from Dagmar's sword, when he put an arrow through a seagull on the wing, when he took the tiller in hand and guided a longship safely through a snarl of foaming rocks. He gave me more smiles than my father and Eddard Stark together. Even Rob. He ought to have won a smile the day he'd saved Bran from that wildling, but instead, he'd gotten a scolding, as if he were some cook who'd burned the stew. "You and I must talk, Uncle," Theon said. Dagmar was no true uncle, only a sworn man with perhaps a pinch of Greyjoy blood 4 or 5 lives back, and that from the wrong side of the blanket. Yet Theon had always called him Uncle nonetheless.
"Come onto my deck, then."
There were no milords from Dagmar, not when he stood on his own deck. On the Iron Islands, every captain was a king aboard his own ship. He climbed the plank to the deck of the Foam Drinker in 4 long strides, and Dagmar led him back to the cramped aft cabin where the old man poured a horn of sour ale and offered Theon the same. He declined. "We did not capture enough horses. A few, but, well, I'll make do with what I have, I suppose. Fewer men means more glory."
"What need do we have of horses?"
Like most iron men, Dagmar preferred to fight on foot or from the deck of a ship.
"Horses will only shit on our decks and get in our way."
"If we sailed, yes," Theon admitted. "I have another plan." He watched the other carefully to see how he would take that. Without the Cleftjaw, he could not hope to succeed. Command or no, the men would never follow him if both Aaron and Dagmar opposed him, and he had no hope of winning over the sour-faced priest.
"Your lord father commanded us to harry the coast, no more."
Eyes pale as sea foam watched Theon from under those shaggy white eyebrows. Was it disapproval he saw there, or a spark of interest? The latter, he thought, hoped. "You are my father's man."
"He's best man, and always have been."
"Pride," Theon thought. "He is proud."
I must use that, his pride will be the key. There is no man in the Iron Islands half so skilled with spear or sword. You have been too long away, boy. When you left, it was, as you say, but I'm grown old in Lord Greyjoy's service. The singers call Andric best know. Andric the Unsmiling, they name him. A giant of a man. He serves Lord Drum of Old Wick. And Black Lauren and Carl the Maid are near as dread. This Andric may be a great fighter, but men do not fear him as they fear you.
Aye, that's so, Dagmar said.
The fingers curled around the drinking horn were heavy with rings, gold and silver and bronze, set with chunks of sapphire and garnet and dragon glass. He had paid the iron price for every one, Theon knew. If I had a man like you in my service, I should not waste him on this child's business of harrying and burning. This is no work for Lord Balon's best man.
Dagmar's grin twisted his lips apart and showed the brown splinters of his teeth.
Nor for his true-born son? He hooted. I know you too well, Theon. I saw you take your first step, helped you bend your first bow. 'Tis not me who feels wasted.
By rights, I should have my sister's command, he admitted, uncomfortably aware of how peevish that sounded.
You take this business to our boy. It is only that your lord father does not know you. With your brothers dead and you taken by the wolves, your sister was his solace. He learned to rely on her, and she has never failed him.
Nor have I. The Starks knew my worth. I was one of Brynden Blackfish's picked scouts, and I charged with the first wave in the Whispering Wood. I was that close to crossing swords with the Kingslayer himself.
Theon held his hands 2 feet apart.
Darren Ornwood came between us and died for it.
Why'd you tell me this?
Dagmar asked.
It was me who put your first sword in your hand. I know you're no craven.
Does my father?
The hoary old warrior looked as if he'd bitten into something he did not like the taste of.
It is only Theon, the boy wolf, is your friend, and these Starks had you for 10 years.
I am no Stark.
Lord Eddard, sort of that. I'm a Greyjoy, and I mean to be my father's heir. How can I do that unless I prove myself with some great deed? You are young. Other wars will come, and you shall do your great deeds. For now, we are commanded to harry the stony shore.
Let my uncle Aaron see to it. I'll give him 6 ships, all but Foam Drinker and Sea Bitch, and he can burn and drown to his guard's surfeit.
The command was given you, not Aaron Damphair.
So long as the harrying is done, what does it matter? No priest could do what I mean to, nor what I ask of you. I have a task that only Dagmar Cleftjaw can accomplish.
Dagmar took a long draught from his horn.
Tell me.
He is tempted, Theon thought. He likes this reaver's work no better than I do. If my sister can take a castle, so can I.
Asher has 4 or 5 times the men we do.
Theon allowed himself a sly smile.
But we have 4 times the wits and 5 times the courage.
Your father
will thank me when I hand him his kingdom. I mean to do a deed that the harpers will sing of for 1,000 years.
He knew that would give Dagmar pause. A singer had made a song about the axe that cracked his jaw in half, and the old man loved to hear it. Whenever he was in his cups, he would call for a reaving song, something loud and stormy that told of dead heroes and deeds of wild valor.
His hair is white, and his teeth are rotten, but he still has a taste for glory.
What would my part be in this scheme of yours, boy?
Dagmar Cleftjaw asked after a long silence, and Theon knew he had won.
To strike terror into the heart of the foe, as only one of your name could do. You take the great part of our force and march on Torrin Square. Elman Torlart took his best men south, and Benfred died here with their sons. His uncle Leobold will remain with some small garrison.
If I'd been able to question Benfred, I would know just how small. Make no secret of your approach. Sing all the brave songs you like. I want them to close their gates.
Is this Torrin Square a strong keep?
Strong enough. The walls are stone, 30 feet high, with square towers at each corner and a square keep within.
Stone walls cannot be fired. How are we to take them? We do not have the numbers to storm even a small castle.
You will make camp outside their walls and set to building catapults and siege engines.
That is not the old way. Have you forgotten? Iron men fight with swords and axes, not by flinging rocks. There is no glory in starving out a foeman.
Leopold will not know that. When he sees you raising siege towers, his old woman's blood will run cold, and he will bleat for help. Stay your archers, uncle, and let the raven fly. The castellan at Winterfell is a brave man, but age has stiffened his wits as well as his limbs. When he learns that one of his king's bannermen is under attack by the fearsome Dagmar Cleftjaw, he will summon his strength and ride to Tallheart's aid. It is his duty. Sir Roderick is nothing if not dutiful.
Any force he summons will be larger than mine, Dagmar said. And these old knights are more cunning than you think, or they would never have lived to see their first grey hair. You set us a battle we cannot hope to win, Theon. This Torrin Square will never fall.
Theon smiled. It's not Torrin Square I mean to take. Arya. Confusion and clangor ruled the castle. Men stood on the beds of wagons, loading casks of wine, sacks of flour, and bundles of new fletched arrows. Smiths straightened swords, knocked dents from breastplates, and shoed destriers and pack mules alike. Mail shirts were tossed in barrels of sand and rolled across the lumpy surface of the flowstone yard to scour them clean. Weezer's women had 20 cloaks to mend, 100 more to wash. The high and humble crowded into the sept together to pray. Outside the walls, tents and pavilions were coming down. Squires tossed pails of water over cook fires, while soldiers took out their oilstones to give their blades one last good lick. The noise was a swelling tide, horses blowing and whickering, lords shouting commands, men-at-arms trading curses, camp followers squabbling. Lord Tywin Lannister was marching at last. Sir Adam Marbrand was the first of the captains to depart, a day before the rest. He made a gallant show of it, riding a spirited red courser whose mane was the same copper colour as the long hair that streamed past Sir Adam's shoulders. The horse was barded in bronze-coloured trappings dyed to match the rider's cloak and emblazoned with a burning tree. Some of the castle women sobbed to see him go. We said he was a great horseman and sword fighter, Lord Tywin's most daring commander. I hope he dies, Arya thought as she watched him ride out of the gate, his men streaming after him in a double column. I hope they all die. They were going to fight Rob, she knew. Listening to the talk as she went about her work, Arya had learned that Rob had won some great victory in the West. He'd burned Lannisport, some said, or else he meant to burn it. He'd captured Castle Rock and put everyone to the sword, or he was besieging the Golden Tooth. But something had happened. That much was certain. Wyse had her running messages from dawn to dusk. Some of them even took her beyond the castle walls, out into the mud and madness of the camp. I could flee, she thought, as a wagon rumbled past her. I could hop on the back of a wagon and hide, or fall in with the camp followers. No one would stop me. She might have done it, if not for Wyse. He'd told them more than once what he'd do to anyone who tried to run off on him.
It won't be no beating, oh no. I won't lay a finger on you. I'll just save you for the cohort, yes I will. I'll save you for the crippler. Vargo Holt, his name is. And when he gets back, he'll cut off your feet.
Maybe if Wheez were dead, Arya thought, but not when she was with him. He could look at you and smell what you were thinking. He always said so. Wheez never imagined she could read, though, so he never bothered to seal the messages he gave her. Arya peeked at them all, but they were never anything good, just stupid stuff, sending this cart to the granary and that one to the armory. One was a demand for payment on a gambling debt, but the knight she gave it to couldn't read. When she told him what it said, he tried to hit her, but Arya ducked under the blow, snatched a silver-banded drinking horn off his saddle, and darted away. The knight roared and came after her, but she slid between two wains, wove through a crowd of archers, and jumped a latrine trench. In his mail, he couldn't keep up. When she gave the horn to Wheez, he told her that a smart little weasel like her deserved a reward.
I've got my eye on a plump, crisp capon to sup on tonight. We'll share it, you and me. You'd like that.
Everywhere she went, Arya searched for Jake and Hagar, wanting to whisper another name to him before those she hated were all gone out of her reach. But amidst the chaos and confusion, the Larathi sellsword was not to be found. He still owed her two deaths, and she was worried she would never get them if he rode off to battle with the rest. Finally, she worked up the courage to ask one of the gate guards if he'd gone.
One of Lorc's men, is he?
The man said.
He won't be going, then. His lordship's name's Sir Aimery Castellan of Arranowl. That lot staying right here to hold the castle. The bloody mummers will be left as well to do the foraging. That goat, Vargo Holt, is like to spit. Him and Lorch have always hated each other.
The mountain would be leaving with Lord Tywin, though. He would command the van in battle, which meant that Dunsan, Polliver, and Raff would all slip between her fingers unless she could find Jaqen and have him kill one of them before they left.
Weasel,
Wheez said that afternoon,
get to the armory and tell Lucan that Sir Lionel notched his sword in practice and needs a new one. Here's his mark.
He handed her a square of paper.
Be quick about it now. He's to ride with Sir Kevin Lannister.
Arya took the paper and ran. The armory adjoined the castle smithy, a long, high-roofed tunnel of a building with 20 forges built into its walls and long stone water troughs for tempering the steel. Half of the forges were at work when she entered. The walls rang with the sound of hammers, and burly men in leather aprons stood sweating in the sullen heat as they bent over bellows and anvils. When she spied Gendry, his bare chest was slick with sweat, but the blue eyes under the heavy black hair had the stubborn look she remembered. Arya didn't know that she even wanted to talk to him. It was his fault they'd all been caught. Which one is Lucan? She thrust out the paper. I'm to get a new sword for Sir Lionel.
Never mind about Sir Lionel.
He drew her aside by the arm.
Last night, Hot Pie asked me if I'd heard you yell Winterfell back at the Holdfast when we were all fighting on the wall.
I never did. Yes, you did. I heard you too.
Everyone was yelling stuff, Arya said defensively. Hot Pie yelled Hot Pie. He must have yelled it 100 times.
It's what you yell that matters. I told Hot Pie he should clean the wax out of his ears, that all you yelled was, go to hell.
If he asks you, you better say the same.
I will, she said, even though she thought go to hell was a stupid thing to yell. She didn't dare tell Hot Pie who she really was. Maybe I should say Hot Pie's name to Jaqen.
I'll get Lucan, Gendry said.
Lucan grunted at the writing, though Arya did not think he could read it, and pulled down a heavy longsword.
Oh, this is too good for that oath. And you tell him I said so,
he said as he gave her the blade. I will, she lied. If she did any such thing, Wheez would beat her bloody. Lucan could deliver his own insults. The longsword was a lot heavier than Needle had been, but Arya liked the feel of it,
The weight of steel in her hands made her feel stronger. Maybe I'm not a water dancer yet, but I'm not a mouse either. A mouse couldn't use a sword, but I can. The gates were open. Soldiers were coming and going, drays rolling in empty and going out, creaking and swaying under their loads. She thought about going to the stables and telling them that Sir Lionel wanted a new horse. She had the paper. The stable boys wouldn't be able to read it any better than Lucan had. I could take the horse and the sword and just ride out. If the guards tried to stop me, I'd show them the paper and say I was bringing everything to Sir Lionel. She had no notion what Sir Lionel looked like or where to find him, though. If they questioned her, they'd know. And then wheeze. Wheeze. As she chewed her lip, trying not to think about how it would feel to have her feet cut off, a group of archers in leather jerkins and iron helms went past, their bows slung across their shoulders. Ari heard snatches of their talk.
Giants, I tell you. He's got giants. 20 foot tall, come down from beyond the wall. Follow him like dogs.
Not natural, coming on them so fast in the night and all. He's more wolf than man. All them Starks are.
Shit on your wolves and giants. The boy'd piss his pants if he knew we was coming. He wasn't man enough to march on Harrenhal, was he? Ran to the way, didn't he? He'd run now if he knew what was best for him.
So you say, but might be the boy knows something we don't. Maybe it's us ought to be running.
Yes, Arya thought. Yes, it's you who ought to run. You and Lord Tywin and the Mountain and Sir Adam and Sir Aemry and stupid Sir Lionel, whoever he is. All of you better run or my brother will kill you. He's a Stark. He's more wolf than man, and so am I.
Weasel!
Weasel's voice cracked like a whip. She never saw where he came from, but suddenly he was right in front of her.
Give me that. Took you long enough.
He snatched the sword from her fingers and dealt her a stinging slap with the back of his hand.
Next time, be quicker about it.
For a moment, she had been a wolf again, but Weasel's slap took it all away and left her with nothing but the taste of her own blood in her mouth. She'd bitten her tongue when he hit her. She hated him for that.
You want another?
Weasel demanded.
You'll get it too. I'll have none of your insolent looks. Get down to the brew house and tell Tuffleberry that I have 2 dozen barrels for him. But he'd better send his lads to fetch them, or I'll find someone wants some worse.
Arya started off, but not quick enough for Weasel.
You run if you want to eat tonight,
he shouted, his promises of a plump, crisp capon already forgotten.
And don't be getting lost again, or I'll swear I'll beat you bloody.
You won't, Arya thought. You won't ever again. But she ran. The old guards of the north must have been guiding her steps. Halfway to the brew house, as she was passing under the stone bridge that arched between Widow's Tower and King's Pyre, she heard harsh, growling laughter. Rorg came round a corner with 3 other men, the manticore badge of Sir Aemry sewn over their hearts. When he saw her, he stopped and grinned, showing a mouthful of crooked brown teeth under the leather flap he wore sometimes to cover the hole in his face.
Yoren's little cunt, he called her. Guess we know why that black bastard wanted you on the wall, don't we?
He laughed again, and the others laughed with him.
Where's your stink now?
Rorg demanded suddenly, the smile gone as quick as it had come.
Seems to me I promised to fuck you with it.
He took a step towards her. Arian edged backward.
Not so brave now that I'm not in chains, aren't you?
I saved you. She kept a good yard between them, ready to run quick as a snake if he made a grab for her.
Owe you another fucking for that, seems like. Did Yowen pump your cunny, or did he like that tight little arse better?
I'm looking for Jakin, she said. There's a message.
Rorg halted. Something in his eyes. Could it be that he was scared of Jake and Hagar?
The bathhouse. Get out of my way.
Ario whirled and ran, swift as a deer, her feet flying over the cobblestone.